This is John Terry, and you're listening to The Blueprint.
Hello, this is Kerry Levy. Welcome to the Blueprint Tapes and our second instalment of the John Terry Tapes. In our previous episode, we ended our story just as Jose Mourinho was entering the Chelsea fray in the summer of 2004. Mourinho brought about significant change for the Blues with the arrival of a manager who set about delivering the sort of success fans had craved for decades. At the heart of his Chelsea was John Terry. And as we pick up our conversation with the Blues legend, we hear how Mourinho handed him the captain's armband to make JT the leader of a new generation.
You'd worn the armband under Claudio, but it was Jose that said, no, you're my captain. Do you remember when he did it? Because it was on the plane to America when he just... You tell the story because it was your story, but without me... You know, ruining it.
Nothing you can tell it better than me.
I remember interviewing you down at Cobham about it, and you said you're on the plane, and he had spoken to Frank and you about who was going to be captain. He just came over to you and went, John, you're captain. And you went, all right, cheers, boss.
Pretty much like that, yeah. It was on the way to LA, and just come to me and said, you're my captain, you're vice captain. I want you two to control it, really. And that was it, very brief. Not a big fuss made of it. Carry on, love what I've seen early on, and carry on. But again, little bits. It's like even when Mourinho spoke about obviously on the pitch and stuff. We had a night out on the last night after LA. So game's done. Boss, can we go out? All the lads, couple of drinks, little bit of togetherness. Yeah, no problem at all. What's the curfew? 12 o'clock. I kind of looked at him just to go, 12 o'clock. He went, 12 o'clock. He said, I know what's going to happen. You're going to call me at 12 and you're going to go, can we stay out for a little bit longer? He said, when you do, it'll be a yes. Don't tell anyone. You'll look good. I'll look good. And you'll have a really good fucking night. So it's 5 to 12. Lads are going, you call the guy, JT, get us another couple of hours. I'm going, lads, you can't have first trip. So playing it up. And I went, all right. So I called him, like, boss, can we have a, I'm just with the boys now in the bar. Can we have another few hours out, like 2-3 in the morning? Fucking hell, I knew you'd break my balls, you lot. 12 o'clock, I said. Come on, gaffer. All right, 2 o'clock. The bar's just erupted. So I've got him, loudspeaker. The bar's erupted. The lads are out till 2 now. And again, I look $1 million. I'm the captain. He looks unbelievable because he's given us a few extra hours. We've had a great trip. And that extra 2 hours... Just that year at that period. I'm not saying it's because of that, but those moments you create when you're on tour and those little bits, powerful, powerful stuff.
What did it take to be Jose Mourinho's captain? Because he was demanding of the players anyway, but yeah, more so on you, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I think first and foremost, you have to be a starter in his team. You have to train the way he wants you to train and play, which is give absolutely everything. Push boundaries, push people around you, demand from everyone, not only on the pitch, but even around the training ground and the staff as well. And I think I give him that. I think I ticked all those boxes for him. Because again, I was one of those trainers where I had to be at my best every day. JT being at 90% wasn't maybe good enough for Mourinho. So I had to be 100% every day. Me being 100% made the likes of Ricky, William, Gaz Kale when he arrives, makes them be 110%, makes them be, they're trying to get in the team and their captain's playing 100% every day and they're trying to get in the team. So you've got everyone working and fighting harder than you do. So I think that's the first and foremost. And I just think you have to be honest as well. And I think within that group, we had some honest conversations with Jose. And I think he knew he could push me probably more than anyone in that group. And he did, like, humiliate me at times on the training pitch, in the dressing room. And again, you look back and go, at the time you go, I'm really fucking angry there. I'll show you. And you don't realise till later down the line or till you get a phone call or a text message the following day of going, you're my captain, I love you. Give Tony and the kids a kiss for me. And it's like, that's big. And it's little bits like that still make me goosebumps now. And at the time you're going, he was just pushing me. Because him shouting and screaming at me, going, not good enough, giving the fucking ball away, not good enough, I'll go and sign Varane, the best defender in the world, I'll go and sign him, you can fuck off. And what that done, he done it to me and Gaz pre-season, we were giving the ball away. Giving the ball away, my two defenders, won the league last year, think you're fucking Maradona. Now the first day training, you've lost the intensity, you've lost it because you won the league last year. After that, the first day of training this was, the session went from here to players almost fighting within the session because me and Gaz are going tackle after tackle. You fucking ain't signing no one. And then we're tackling Cess got the ump, Diego. Everyone's got the ump and now we're kicking shit out of each other. And the training session's gone from here to here. And I remember him giving us a big cuddle as we were walking off the pitch and went, that's why you're my two centre-halves. And again, it's just a powerful message, but he knew he could push me, he knew he could push Gaz, he knew he could push Lamps and Didier if he needed to. And what that does is, when you're pushing your captain, that sends a message to everyone else, and Jose was like this, I don't give a shit who you are, you could be starting, you could be the captain, if you're not good enough, you're not good enough, I'm going to tell you.
That's the stuff with Gaz, that's 2015, right?
Yeah.
Barcelona, we'll get onto the proper Barcelona stuff in a minute, but just talking about the 2005 game, what do you remember about the game at the Nou Camp?
Obviously, you go there, stadium's obviously mind-blowing, unbelievable. And at the time, I think that era of that Barcelona side were the best in my generation of playing. The style of play they were playing, the players they had, and just excited for the challenge, to be honest. Didn't go there fearing them, didn't go there intimidated by them. Went there actually thinking, we've got a top manager who believes in us, we've got top players and we can beat them here. That was my thoughts.
But then Anders Frisk happened.
Yeah.
Do you remember much about that? Because we spoke to Steve about it and he's sort of taken us in the corridor of what he saw with Rijkaard and that. Do you remember what was going on and what happened after and, you know, the feeling of we've just been done here or...?
No, you know what? I don't, to be honest. I don't... I've never been one to get caught up in that because... And the reason for that would be there's been many, many times we've been the bigger, better side, intimidating players, managers and referees or people have crumbled under that pressure and it served us well. So I was never one to kind of go, oh, that's gone against us or, you know, throw... But that wasn't me. It really wasn't me. A few others did, but I kind of tended to stay away from that, me, because I knew it kind of flip-flaps and it would come our way and had done previously as well.
Because it was pretty incredible because after that, UEFA come out. They call Chelsea enemies of football. The press are going after Chelsea. They're going after Jose. They end up going after Steve Clarke. Again, I'm talking from the outside looking in, but it feels like they don't like it.
Mm.
They don't like what Roman's doing.
Yeah.
They don't like what Jose's doing. This elite of European football, let alone what's going on in England, Barcelona are getting it now and they're losing, or they're potentially losing to Chelsea. They can't sign the players Chelsea are signing. Yeah. Chelsea are here. And they're ruffling these feathers. Did you feel any of that? Or did we just feel it as fans?
No, 100%. I felt that. I felt that in England, Premier League. Even still today, you talk to people and it's like, oh, I hated that team under that era of us. It was like, because we changed it. We changed the Premier League. It was Man United, Arsenal, that had their own way for many years. And we completely threw a spanner in the works, probably a lot earlier than we should have done. And they didn't like it. And that's the same with them as well. They were the best side in the world at the time, with top managers, top players. And like you say, we ruffled a few feathers and they didn't like it. And again, going back to that, we had a manager that went and faced it, spoke about it, fronted it up, didn't kind of go, oh, I'm not really allowed to. He said what he wanted to say and no press officer at Chelsea was going to tell him otherwise. No owner was going to tell him otherwise. And then he'd come in the dressing room and say to us that he's out there fronting us. He's got our backs. It's us against the rest. And he'd often say that as a group, Premier League games, it's us against the rest, nobody likes us, the FA, this, the Premier League, UEFA, they're all against us. And it makes you think at the time going, yeah, they are, they're all against us. And it kind of, yeah, everyone's against us. Let's all get together even more. And again, same with the Claudio stuff. It just brings you tighter together as a unit. And what we had, a team, you look back at the Blackburn when we walk off the pitch, it's like we could have took on the world that night. And kind of our leader at the front of it in Jose and all the players kind of marching behind him, shirts off. That was the mentality of the group, that going, yeah, no one likes us and everyone's against us. And you know what? We'll have it with anyone. That was our mentality as a group.
So just going back to Barcelona, and you've got the 2 weeks in between the games, and then they bring Kalina in to be the ref. Everyone's building this up, and within 20 minutes, Lamps has scored, Ida scored, and Duff scored 3-0. Looks like it's game over.
Yeah.
And then Ronaldinho comes along and...
Was it? I remember looking up, was it 21 minutes or something? Yeah. I'm sure it's 21 minutes or... I remember going, Jesus Christ, what a start. But again, those nights at the bridge under the lights were the best for me. And then obviously Ronaldinho gets his goal. Paolo gives away the penalty, which is kind of handball. And again, you could probably debate that one as well. Is it handball? Was he? Yeah, it's one of those. And then probably my best and most important goal at the bridge for me, for Chelsea, against such a big team and kind of what it meant. And everything was just really kind of iconic for me.
But when you scored it, you run off for your celebration, and I think it's Lamps is the first one that grabs you. Clive Tilsley's commentary was, Duff with the corner, go silent for a second, you head it, and he just goes, captain's goal from John Terry. You got your own view on yourself, right? But I look back at that, and I don't know what Kerry thinks, but I look back at that, and I'm like, that's when he became the man.
Mm.
We knew what you were already, right?
Yeah.
But that's when we're like, John's ours, and he's just done that. Screw you, Barcelona.
Mm.
And obviously, Ricky gives a little tug on.
Didn't touch him, Rick, did he? If that's against a different team, it probably hasn't got that impact. Because it was against him and what happened in the away leg and everything, probably kind of built it up, built the tension up. I felt in before that, we were making things happen and I was going to be part of it. That goal for me was really iconic because... just the importance of it to score the kind of winner against the top Barcelona side and get us through was brilliant. But way before that, pre-season, I felt I'm here with Jose. It's really, really weird to say, but again, like you said, when you text your parents going, we're winning the league, that's how I felt that year. But not kind of 10 games in pre-season, I felt that. And when I'd done that speech and kind of looked at everyone, everyone's looking at me in the eyes as well, I'm going, yeah, they believe what I believe and what I'm seeing here as well.
And after that Barcelona game, those celebrations were just mental. And it's always that iconic picture. There's you and Frank with Jose in his grey coat.
Yeah.
That night at the bridge, I'm MHL. And that is one of those goals and one of those post-match celebrations where you actually feel as though your feet don't belong on the ground. Mm. It was just one of the most...
It was rocking though, wasn't it? You didn't get managers come out on the pitch after games and kind of lead the players to the supporters and stuff. And he was part of that. He's like, again, he'd kind of come in and he'd be there with you, in, like you say, in the long coat. You'd be there pumping your fists to the supporters. You look around and he's gone. He's disappeared down the tunnel again. But he's kind of drove us over and now there's that interaction with us. That they're the moments as players you love and you kind of look back and go, yeah, that's massive, that. And he was instrumental in all of that. Getting us out with the supporters, making that connection, us against everyone else. Great night on the pitch, great night off the pitch afterwards as well with the lads.
At the end of that season, you did what only Roy Bentley had ever done before, and that was lift the league title as Chelsea captain.
Yeah. Again, look back at that moment as a 14-year-old boy signing on the pitch. I just knew... Like I said, knew we were going to win that league. It's quite emotional. I knew we were going to win that league. And the way we done it and the manner we done it will live with me forever. Literally every game, every moment, the travelling. It's one of those moments that will be remembered forever. And I think when I first come in this team, you want to leave a legacy. And people talk about leaving a legacy. I wanted to leave a legacy of being remembered as a player, the way I played and what I give for the shirt and the supporters and everyone. But when you leave memories for generations, that's the main thing for me. And we done that, we created that. We was unbelievable that year. And to think that I was part of that and captain the side for the first time in 50 years was really, really special.
Just want to get on to 2012, but before I do, just because we want to put it into context, 2008 against Man United, I don't know if anyone talks about, and this isn't to lay, I'm not lame saying someone's to blame here. If Didier didn't get sent off, he would have had that penalty, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
And no one talks about that. They think that you stepped up to take it to get the moment, but it was because Didier had got sent off.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of, I think Man United start this as well, where they throw out the rumours, and I spat in Tevez's face or something as well that I read quite a lot, which is completely untrue. Obviously, Didier gets sent off for slapping Vidic around the face. And obviously, Didier would have been fifth like he was in Munich and everything else. And I would have been sixth and the rest would have been kind of history. But it's one of those moments. It's funny because even a few months before this as well, I think Spy said to me that the last three teams that have won the Champions League, the captain has taken the last or something. And it just kind of just stayed there, and then obviously I go and miss and everything. So it's one of those moments that, honestly, for years struggled, and probably in the last 3 or 4 years, it's probably got a little bit easier. And I think winning in 2012 has definitely helped it. It would have been really tough to have never won the Champions League, having that so close at the time. But again, I was confident enough to step up and take it. And again, it's football, isn't it? It's defining moments. We speak about the early years. The late years sometimes define those moments as well. And we're going to win it in 2012. It makes it more special because you go, Monaco, we just spoke about, we should have won it. 9-10, we should have won it. We're by far the best team. 8, obviously, we should have won it. And then 2-12. So out of all of that, you win it once where you should have really won it 4 times. Maybe even 5. You probably throw one more in there. And you go, that's the hardest competition to win. And I think they're the reasons why. But things happen in football, and I just wish I would have let Kalou take it.
Well, because this is the thing, though. What I love about that Chelsea team is you had the disappointment of 08. Mm. Then you come back with, you know, Avram goes, Big Phil comes in, goes tits up. He's gone in February. Gus comes in. You win the FA Cup. And I said Anders Frisk happens. Tom Henning of Rabo happens. And you're in the semi-final, and you should have gone through in that game.
Yeah.
And I just think that adversity of you kept coming back.
Yeah.
You kept coming back. You get to the semi-final. What are your memories of that semi-final? Do you remember how many penalties? It should have been about 7 penalties. Or
it's funny. I played golf today, and I was having a conversation with Justin Rose about it, actually. And he was going, how did you not get 5 penalties? I was like, it was probably more like 6 or 7. But even you take away the tackles and the fouls, the free hand balls were, and it's obviously Didier as his outburst after and everything. I think that was the year where we were like, enough now, we need to win. Players are getting towards the end of their career. That was a big opportunity for us, and having it kind of felt like it was taken away from us. But again, against the top Barcelona side, if they were playing against anyone else in that competition, they would have wiped the floor with anyone, as they did in the final that year. We were the only team, I believe, in the world for those 6, 7, 8 years that we come up against them, that they would have, and I know, hated playing against us. They would have faced anyone other than us. And I think we're lucky to put ourselves and test ourselves against the best players, best teams. That definitely drives you even more when you get knocked out like that. And again, I was never one for that. It definitely comes and goes, those bits with referees and stuff. I went in the dressing room after, probably 5 minutes after, they've all come down the tunnel. And I said to Pep, I need to speak to the players. He was like, yeah. So it's all gone silent. They've just beat us. And I said, I asked one fucking thing. We should have won that tonight. You go and beat fucking Man United in the final. And that was it. Walked out. And they've clapped me out. And it was really weird. But I was just like, you know what? We've just battered the best team in the world. Battered them. Could have been 4 or 5. That would have been a big statement that year. We didn't, but it comes back. It comes back around. In 2012 was probably our worst team for me, and we go and win the Champions League. So it gave us something back when we needed it, and we all needed it as players because that was that last kind of era of Didier and Lamps and myself and everyone else. So I think as long as you give the right stuff to the game, it will throw stuff back out at you as well.
When you went in the dressing room, did they acknowledge they got off?
Oh, yeah, they knew. They knew. Yeah.
So here's some more stats for you, John. Because you say Barcelona didn't like playing Chelsea. In your career at Chelsea, you played them 10 times.
Yeah.
How many times did you lose to Barcelona, do you know?
Once.
Twice.
Went twice.
1-3, lost 2, drew 5. No one did that with Barcelona, did they?
No. Not even come close.
We always joke, we're like, Cech had to go to Arsenal before Messi could score past him.
They were by far the best team. But again, was never fearful of them, never scared of them. Actually loved the fact they're coming back to the Bridge. Even that 4-5, it was, come back to the Bridge, this is our place now, it's different. This place is special here. And I think Chelsea have had that ever since. And we still had it even recently, the Madrid game and stuff, when we're battering them for 40 minutes. And we've got that about us where being the underdogs, we're okay with that because we will take on the world if we have to. And I think when you're a captain player, you've been here so long as well, you try and kind of pass that on to the likes of Aspie and those guys. And hopefully that gets passed on through generations. And hopefully that remains at the club forever. And I think if we have that, we'll be all right.
So just moving on to 2011-12, I'm only going to ask this question because we want insight. We're not looking for any controversy. AVB, obviously you knew him as an analyst under Jose.
Yeah.
Young guy, ambitious. What were his plans when he came in? But this term that goes around, he's lost the dressing room. Did he lose the dressing room? And if he did, why did he lose it?
Well, I think he did. I think we all respected him because he was part of Jose's team when he first came in. He was very good at what he'd done. And then all of a sudden he was the manager. But then also, eyes are on him first day of training. Okay, let's see what you got. And I think that's the same with any manager that walks through the door. The first few days in training, you've got to make an impact with a group. He was very well organised, was very good. I think he tried to get rid of the older players. And anyone coming into our football club at that time, it was the biggest mistake you probably could have made. Ash, Lamps, Didier, I played a little bit, but to me in my face, he was saying the right things to me. And I remember having conversations with on the Napoli game with him. Obviously, I didn't play. I had an operation a couple of days later. And as the team went out, he pulled me. And he was like, I think I've messed up here. And I was like, well, I've been telling you that. You can't get rid of Lamps. You can't not play Ash. You can't. And it hit him for the first time. And you could see the emotion in his face. It was, he knew at that point that he'd made a couple of big calls that night, and if it didn't go well, he knew what was coming, and he got what was coming to him, really. And I mean that in the nicest way, because he's a nice guy. He was a very good coach, and his football understanding and knowledge was very, very good. But you can't get rid of big characters like that. You can't. Especially when people underneath that are not the characters you want kind of leading that team anyway. And we had a couple where you go in, players come in, wasn't really for us moving forward, and kind of got put out the door pretty soon after that as well.
You've got the Aussie and Chopper of their era here.
Yeah.
And you can't turn your back on that just yet.
Yeah.
You know, Lamps went on to play for another or 3 years. You went on to play for another 6 years.
Yeah, that was my next point. It was players that were probably in the prime of their careers, really. And you just wouldn't... I don't know whether... That couldn't have been coming from inside. He had his own ideas that he wanted to kind of do and move on and stuff, and that didn't include the older generation. He wanted the younger squad. He wanted to play a really high line. That was a big debate I was having with him, that I wanted to play a little bit deeper and he wanted to play really high. And I don't know where that kind of taken us kind of moving forward if he'd have stayed with me. But yeah, he tried far too quickly to move it on. And you look at the Napoli game here, the four guys that scored the goals, me, Branner, Didier and Lamps, the four are the oldest players in the group. But us four scoring those goals, kind of getting us through that big deficit that we had to turn around. Ash's clearance off the line when he come on late on was huge. And again, probably the year we didn't deserve to win it, we go and win it. It's just amazing what football does.
When Robbie took over, obviously you'd known him since you were a kid, right?
Yeah.
And he'd been AVB's, one of his assistants. Do you remember what he did Frank just said he got you, Didier, and him together and said, boys, I need, basically what you said about Jose, I need you to run that dressing room. And
yeah, pretty simple, really. Kept it really simple, let us do the work, and he done his bit. He was very honest with the group, with individuals. His team meetings were good. He obviously played and won things with Chelsea, had that passion, showed little bits of that in the dressing room, on the training pitch, in his team meetings, and had the respect of the players. And again, didn't try and overcomplicate it, didn't come in and try and be this unbelievable coach. It was kind of let us kind of do our bit and continue the way we were going.
When Eddie came in, he'd got a call the night before from Robbie, and he drove down from near Birmingham, and he said when Robbie first introduced him, he grabbed him and said, look, when you go in there, tell me what you see. And Eddie said he saw a broken dressing room. Did it feel like that to you guys?
No, I wouldn't say a broken one. It felt probably a confused one, if I'm honest, because it was, yeah, a manager previously trying to get everyone out and feeling like it was probably going to happen if he would have stayed, and, you know, players not playing games, not being involved, and a different type of player coming in and playing in those games and seeing a shift in the, this ain't right here. This is so confused, really. I wouldn't say broken, because I don't think we had a group that would have let it get that far, if that makes sense. We just needed someone to come in and guide us. And again, you look at all of our successful years, yeah, we've had top managers, but we've also had big personalities and big dressing rooms. And I think that's always served us well.
So Barcelona in the Nou Camp, do you remember, obviously, Alexis Sanchez stuff happens. Do you remember going into, because Gareth says, yeah, I did my hamstring and I was obviously in getting treatment. And then John came in. I thought, it can't be half time already. Do you remember what it was like in the dressing room when you were in there thinking?
I thought that was it. Thought we're out. Obviously, I made a big mistake and need him in the bum or whatever. Do you remember the first game here at the Bridge? He got a dead leg. I remember watching their game the weekend before our game, and he got a dead leg. And as he spun down the side of me, I just remember standing there, and he just ran straight into his leg, and kind of just that was him out of that game then at the Bridge. And then obviously the return leg, in the back of my head, I'm going, I'll just do the same. And then just a black mist comes up and you get sent off and go in there. Gaz is obviously in there. I'm crying my eyes out now at this point. You just can't, 10 men against the best team in the world, no matter how well we've done against them, I just could never see us winning. Could never see it. And then obviously they get the goal. And then just before half time, Lamps' through ball, Ramirez' goal, and you're going, oh, this is us. This has got us written all over it. And now I'm kind of pacing about, I'm walking about the dressing room. Lads come in, you're embarrassed and you're apologising and everything. And it's like, no, you've rescued Didier and Lamps and people like this. You've rescued us enough times. It's now down to us to step up for our captain and let's do it for us. And just really emotional, because I didn't see it happening. I thought we'd get beat. And obviously I'd go out and front that and everything that come with it. To do it in the way we did was unbelievable. I'd much prefer to be on the pitch, let me tell you.
So in Munich, we spoke to Todd Kane, because no one know, I guess you know, but no one knows the story about how he was in the dressing room warming up.
Mm.
And he said he ended up watching the game with you. Do you remember anything about Todd? Because he said he got the call on the, Steve Holland called him on the Wednesday and said, oh, Toddy, get your suit, you're coming to Munich.
Mm.
Because the injuries were terrible, right?
Yeah. Did Gaz get done in the final or semi or?
He did his hamstring against Barcelona, obviously, in the semi.
Yeah.
David Luiz was injured.
Yeah.
And then Gaz missed the FA Cup final because of it.
Yeah.
Which everyone seems to forget, we beat Liverpool that year.
Yeah.
So what was it like for you? Because you're there for a rare time. It's a rare moment for you. You're an observer on such a big occasion.
Yeah. Horrible, if I'm honest. Really bad. Really nervous. Even the afternoon, it's like, you know, like players are eating in the afternoon at the hotel. You have your food and you go, oh, normally I'll be going back for a little sleep here just before kind of pre-match in a couple of hours and stuff. And it's like, I remember being there with all the young lads, like, who was there at the time? There was a load of young lads that Robbie had obviously taken. And we're doing like a press up and sit up kind of exercise thing up on the pool. So we're sunbathing. It just didn't feel right. Like, I should have been in my bed asleep preparing for probably the biggest game of my life, Mum. And I'm on the top floor of the hotel doing press-ups around the pool. It was really weird. But even that moment of obviously getting to the stadium, the build-up and stuff, not having those kind of playing nerves. It was a different, could we lose today because I'm not playing? Could we win today? And all of that is, all the emotions kind of go with you. Then the players go out to warm up and there's like 40 minutes where you're doing absolutely nothing. And you're like, I'm not really allowed that pitch side because I'm suspended. So you're in the dressing room and it's just the longest night of my life, but the best. And the people often ask me this, what's your best night in the history of playing for Chelsea? That night would be top for me. Again, going right back to Monaco because I know what it takes to go and win it and been through so many almost there but didn't, almost there, didn't, almost there, didn't. Yeah, we done it. Even though I didn't play, it's my best night and best experience in a Chelsea shirt, should we say.
Well, just on that, because again, people say, oh, JT and his kit. But anyone, the rules are you've got to be in your kit to lift the trophy, right?
Yeah.
So many players have done it before you and after you. They've done it for national teams, club teams. Why do they talk about it with you? I don't get it.
I don't know. It's probably, I'm an easy target for the press, I think. But I think they forget that Brannan was on top of the crossbar in his full kit as well. But listen, I don't...
Morelos.
Yeah.
He was... Morelos didn't play and he was in his kit.
It's what you do.
Yeah. And also, obviously, Dave Barnard spoke to FIFA and it was like, if you win, they want everyone in their kits because they don't want 20 people in kits, then four in suits and then more kits. So everyone was... And listen, I was in my kit very, very quickly, they say, after that final whistle. But yeah, I'm okay with that.
Just to summarise on how Chelsea impacted football and to know that really Glenn comes in 93, sets it up, brings in Ruud and then Jody and that to start establishing themselves. But then they set it up for you boys to really do it. Chelsea, no one's won more trophies than Chelsea in English football, even City in the 21st century. Chelsea are the team in the 21st century. How does that make you feel?
Yeah, really proud. It's and again, you speak about Glenn and players like that. The importance of that and the change and Viales and Ranieri's coming in, changing the mentality of the training ground, all of that. I promise you, it doesn't happen. Where we got to, it doesn't happen without all of that. And being a young player and seeing that and experiencing all of that, and for me as captain, doing everything here, kit man, clean the toilets, clean the stadium, paint the stadium, done it all. And then to be that captain that's gone on to do that, where you do leave a legacy. And in 100 years, when I'm dead and I'm gone, my kids will be, this will be a place for them to come and remember their dad. And it just makes me feel really proud because... Obviously, you all have dreams and expectations of being a professional footballer. You don't know where that's going to take you, but we were so lucky, and I were lucky to captain a great group who had the same mentality as me, and we had an owner in Roman that had a very, very similar mentality. It was unbelievable, and he gave us the support, players, staff, and fans, the belief that anything could happen. And I think when I put that with a mix of players we had. Without a doubt, I hope my wife don't listen to this. Playing for Chelsea has been the best thing that's ever happened to me, and I'm proud. Even you drive past. I'm often in London. You drive past there, and I often kind of pull over, and just sit there and stare and look through and go, I used to play there. It's quite weird because you kind of things move on and stuff, but that connection you don't see that nowadays, and you won't see it. And the likes of Stevie at Liverpool. What I done here, the relationship with the fans, you won't often see it. You might see it. You might see it with Reece and people like that. Football's changed a little bit. And I think, unfortunately, for players and supporters, they won't get to experience what I've experienced and what we've given each other. Like my kids now, I get, obviously, through the club, get tickets and stuff. And the kids, like, they don't want to sit there. Want to go in the shed. Want to go in the Mafiali. And it's like... My kids are here now kind of watching this team and they come in and feel like it's a connection. We're always going to have that. And I think what we've created is kind of giving people, families that of doing it. And that makes me more proud than anything. And now seeing my kids kind of come in that are proper Chelsea as well.
How important is it when you were a youngster at this club that you had the older players showing you the ropes, bringing you on? How important was it to go through... Because you were looking after Dennis and Dave Lee.
Eddie Newton, yeah.
And what was that like? How did that make you feel a part of the club and understand what Chelsea meant?
Well, why is he obviously very big in that? But obviously Dave Lee, big character, Eddie Newton, good guys, and pretty much within their little group kind of run the dressing rooms and kind of everything revolved around Wisey. So often he'd call me in, and not that there was many times, but, you know, he'd put a bit of mud on the bottom of his boot. You missed a bit. Go and fucking clean them boots again, you know, in front of the lads. And while you're out, do us all a coffee and all of those bits. But it builds you as a character. And what it does is when you've got someone like Wisey who's got you back, so when you step out of line, I remember buying a car and Wisey getting me up against the wall. Go and give the car back. You buy a house, look after your money and all of that. Really powerful life experiences that probably other fields get that on a YTS on a building site, whatever that may be. I got that through Wisey and through all of those guys of doing bits. That tea's not good enough. Go and do it again. Go and run me a bath. All those little bits, it's like, it's really powerful because you're a young 16-year-old and you're walking down the dressing room corridor and Viali's going, JT, run my bath for me. Put the soap in. It's those silly bits. And you tell people and you kind of be in there. I remember doing it for my dad. You swirl in the cold and hot water so it's not hot one end and not the other. And he'd get in and go, oh, JT. And he'd be in his boots. He'd be putting his Deodora boots on and he'd be getting them ready for the weekend. And all those little bits, you have a small input of that, of making him feel a little bit special, but also in making me feel he's won what he's won, achieved what he had achieved, and he's calling me JT. And it's just powerful. And why has he created that with all the players, that you know the players' names, you tell them when they need to be better. And I tried to take all of that on board for me. So you pass that on to Aspie, and I know Aspie's the same as well, and we've obviously had an emotional one with him leaving. But you hope that generations, like even the Spurs one, Wisey fucking hated Spurs. And every time we played them, he used to get me on here like this. Don't fucking ever lose to these. Probably a little bit more there as well. It just meant that me and Spurs hate each other. I hate them, they hate me. And that's important. That's important for those 45,000 people out there to realise that. But it's obviously important for them to realise that we've not lost here in 20 years. But I didn't, in my era. Don't let it happen. It's not acceptable. There's a rivalry in football, which is there, but there's other rivalries that mean a little bit more to these supporters. And I think when you inherit that, you pass that on. You just hope you leave that and it continues.
And do you think all of that set you up for becoming a full-time player in the side? Did it change you mentally when you suddenly realised, I have now played for the first team? Mm. And how did that affect you?
Well, again, it just makes you probably pump your chest out a little bit, and not in a bad way, but you walk around and people are intimidated by that around the training ground. So you're a young 18-year-old and you kind of want things done and it doesn't get done. It's just how it is. When you're captain of the club and you want things done and improvements for the group and the staff, you want the staff looked after better, the away travel, the amount of times the players chipped in and we've done buses for the supporters, all of those bits that mean a lot to the supporters, mean a lot to the players. When you've got that connection and you can overpower stuff and you can generate money from the players or from the club and go, that needs to be sorted and things happen. That's important, that's powerful. And I think that kind of builds with the more you win, the more powerful you get as a group of players. And there was often conversations about, is our group too powerful? No, it wasn't, because we all wanted the same thing. We wanted to win. We wanted that extra 5%, 10% margin. And we pushed the club on that, getting it right, getting the pitch right, getting the training ground right, making sure we had enough supporters away at Newcastle on a Tuesday night. That was important to us. And you feel that because you've seen it.
And lastly, how would you describe Chelsea fans?
Chelsea fans for me are the best supporters that I've seen. And I mean that for me. I'm not saying in the world that's not for me to say. I'm saying for me and what they've done for me. Because I look back at my early games in the Chelsea shirt and I'm like, oh my God, I've given it away again. Oh, Jesus Christ, what have I done there? It's my fault, mistake for a goal. And after the game, it's them that are cheering, clapping, waving me off the pitch, turn up next week and they're there again singing my name. And what that does for a young boy, again, it just empowers you, because you come out and go, I'm not getting fucking beat today. You know why? Because I've got 40,000 of my mates with me and they're here, they're singing my name. They've got my back because they trust me and I trust the team that I'm kind of in control of. So I say that in the best positive way, that they were the best supporters in the world for me and what they give me. And I'm not sure fans really realise, you get players saying, oh, the fans are brilliant, they're important. To young homegrown players, you can make a massive fucking difference on a weekly basis. Of clearly I made mistakes and you turn up the following week and they go again, they sing your name. What that does for you, it brings you another 2-3 levels up. And that's important because it raises my game, because I'm not only letting myself down, I'm letting them down when I'm making mistakes. So it makes me concentrate, it makes me work harder, makes me train harder. And they give you that. So for me, the best.
And lastly, do you ever daydream about Chelsea and things you've done or anything? Do you imagine winning the Champions League again? Do you still have dreams about Chelsea?
I've won it 5 times since I retired.
Excellent. I wish we'd been there.
The Blueprint Tapes will return with more insight from the key voices who have shaped Chelsea's modern history. You've been listening to a Chelsea Sideline Club podcast. The full credits for this series can be found in our show notes. For more content like this and to join our growing community of Chelsea fans, become a Chelsea Sideline Club member on Apple Podcasts or via our website, chelseasideline.club.